Welcome to Intersection Live, the tax and accounting profession's premier podcast source, provided by the CPA Technology Advisor and ADP Small Business Services, supporting the accountant community. This is Tech to Go, a monthly fast-paced roundtable discussion with executive editor Darren Root and regular columnists of the CPA Technology Advisor. These thought leaders tackle current technology issues impacting the tax and accounting profession.
Hi, this is Darren Root, executive editor of the CPA Technology Advisor, and you are listening to episode 35 of Tech to Go. First, I would like to thank our corporate sponsor, ADP, for today's podcast. And today we're going to be talking about several different topics. First is CCH and some new releases coming from them. We're going to talk a little bit about CPA to Biz and what's going on in their world. Dave's going to give us an update on what's going on with net neutrality, and we're also going to talk about MiFi. So with that in mind, I'd like to introduce my co-host. I have Randy Johnston here, principal with K2 Enterprises. So welcome, Randy.
Good day to all, or as I would normally say at this time of year, aloha for my annual broadcast from the Hawaiian Islands.
Oh, that's fantastic. I also have Renee Lassert, the CEO of Bill.com. So welcome, Renee.
Thanks, Darren. Great to be here, and hope everybody had a safe Halloween.
And I know you're calling from an airport today, right, Renee?
That's correct.
Okay, good. And then we have Dave McClure, the president of the U.S. Internet Industry Association. So welcome, Dave.
Well, thank you. It's always a pleasure.
It feels like we're all over the globe today. Randy's in Hawaii. You and I are on the East Coast, Dave, and Renee's out on the West Coast. So, well, let's just kick right off. Randy, you and I this week were at CCH in just outside of Washington, D.C., and we had a great time. So why don't you fill our listeners in on what's going on with them?
Well, the CCH User Conference was held at the end of October at the Gaylord National, which is a relatively new property but a great meeting space. As usual, CCH did a first-class job of with their annual event. The big news, of course, was their next-gen product, which we've discussed off and on in prior calls, was officially announced and was officially released on Friday, October 30th. So they now have available their next-gen SaaS-oriented product running out of IBM data centers, and they basically have a strategy to migrate the rest of their product line into next-gen. The product features are pretty broad. I'm happy to disclose to our listeners that I've had the opportunity over the last 3 years of helping with a fair bit of the design, so it's not an unbiased view that I'm coming from, but I do know how much of the product we gave direct feedback on and how much of that direct feedback exists in the delivered product. We know that there's going to be expanded features as the product goes on. They delivered a usable set here in version 1. And the most notable item is a new module for CCH called WorkStream, which is a workflow product. So on announcement, CCH actually delivered 5 core modules, a new generation practice, which is a combination of practice and practice management, or using the old words, PACS and VPM, into a single deliverable. A new generation of ProSys and tax, which runs actually notably quicker than their predecessor version. They have a new version of Document, a version of Portal, which is really a true hosted portal, plus WorkStream in the initial announcement.
You know, I had the opportunity, Randy, too, to play with that a little bit, and the thing that jumped out at me was this common client database, at least for demographics. It's sort of a single launch point. Can you kind of talk a little bit about that? Because we really haven't seen that much in the industry so far.
We have not. And the core design feature of this central database has 2 or 3 caveats, exceptionally important caveats, I think, for CPA firms. First is that you can control the in-user information between all of the different modules, and it is all stored in one single place. Number 2 is the database can be replicated. So what happens is, from the hosted data center, you can also have local copies of your database for local performance and reliability in case a communication line fails. Number three is it also has two-way synchronization into Exchange data. So what you have in your practice database being used for business development can be automatically synchronized there. And then number four in terms of key features on the database is that it actually allows and is provisioned such that you can use lots of other outside products with it. CCH, interestingly enough, as a strategy, built their product so it could interface with what they called best of breed in the marketplace, and it's specifically enabled to do so.
So, and my also my understanding is that we're only seeing a SaaS version of this next generation right now with on-premise to come later.
That's exactly correct. The SaaS version is shipping now, and I've asked a number of my clients to go to the SaaS version right now because they had business needs to do so, knowing full well it's a first-generation product and is likely to be buggy. But compared to what they were using in-house, it was so much better. Plus, they didn't have to buy all of the servers and do all the virtualization and all this technology stuff that we've been talking about. CCH intends to deliver all of the modules that we just named, practice and tax and document and so forth, in their firm versions before September of next year. They intend to release each module when they are satisfied that it's ready to use in firm. But for our practitioner listeners, they should anticipate that none of those will really happen before April. So you should enter this tax season on your existing platform with the intent that you would convert. Now, we talked about the conversion utility in prior podcasts where we really spoke to this data migration utility that has to be run, and that is still exactly the situation. Before you can get on the next-gen product, you have to have a clean run of the data migration utility, and that's a good activity to do this fall and into the late spring to have your clerical admin people do some of the cleanup under partner direction.
Renee, I know this is really plays into a lot of what you guys are doing. I mean, certainly, you know, with the SaaS-based application from that standpoint. But wow, I mean, this was a big commitment that CCH made. I know in a press briefing they said they had invested $70 million over the last 4 years, you know, in bringing this out. So it feels like a sizable investment.
Yeah, definitely. It's a lot of money. I know similar numbers have gone around Intuit as well for some of the applications they've been building. And I think part of the thing that's always at the core is, you know, are they building it right? And so I haven't had a chance to see it yet, so I don't know if they did. But it sounds like from all the reviews from you guys that they've done a really good job at it.
What I saw looked really good.
Their initial budget, by the way, was $100 million, and there was really something that Mike Sabatis said that caught my ear that said they'd actually ask for a little more development money. So I really had this question in my mind, did they spend all the $100 million, even though publicly they've said $70 million? So they have really strategically tried to build it with all of the correct tools to be very Microsoft.NET friendly, but they also preserved compatibility for Mono for open source if need be. And again, best I can tell, they've done everything right. I did ask for a technical review, which I'll try to get done in the next 4 to 6 weeks because I want to tear the product apart now that it's put together and has gone through the alpha and betas, because I want to tune up some of the things that I think I saw in the interface and inside the product.
Guys, before we go on to CPA to Biz, I'd like to see if Dave could just give us a quick update on what's going on with net neutrality.
Sure, I'd be happy to. As you may or may not know, last week the Federal Communications Commission actually released what they call a Notice of Proposed Rulemaking, which would take the four freedoms that they adopted in 2005 as a philosophy and make them a true regulation. At the same time, they added in two new ones that were not in the original four, one which would have specifically told service providers that they cannot in any way deprive any user of competitive access to applications and services and content on the Internet. And the second, which would require network operators to give full disclosure on what their network management strategies and rules were. Now, on the surface, all six of these are good things. They're things that all of us, I think, would desire to have in a very open Internet. The problem lies, and this is where folks like, I think, the EFF, Electronic Frontier Foundation, has some concerns, is that there are, first of all, it runs 160 pages, which is very, very long for an FCC notice. It's terribly detailed, but chock full of terms that are not defined. And anytime you make law based on undefined terms, you're guaranteeing that it's going to be tied up in the courts for years and years while people argue about what is considered reasonable network management, for example, as opposed to unreasonable. All of this means that the FCC is going to be accepting public comments until February and reply comments until March, so we're really not going to see much out of it until next year. And because this is a very political process at all, it could be impacted very strongly by the midterm elections coming up, tomorrow, and other issues. So for now, net neutrality is simmering along. Not everybody's happy with it, and we're just going to have to wait to see what comes out of it. And that's, you know, the best update I can give.
Don't you guys have a big race going on right now in Virginia, Dave? Political race?
We do. We do. The governor's race where the Republican candidate is expected to unseat his Democratic challenger. Virginia is very strange in that it has very strict term limits. The governor can only serve one term. So it's a real contest every time around. And this time it looks like the Republican's going to come out ahead. He's way ahead in the polls.
Oh, yeah, that's what the news has been saying, so good. Well, Renee, I don't know if you guys all heard this. I'd like to get Renee's take on this first, but CPA to Biz about a week ago announced a strategic relationship with Companion. So they now have Intact, Bill.com, and Companion with some strategic relationships. So, Renee, kind of tell us what's going on with CPA to Biz, their strategy, and what we should be thinking about there.
Well, I think actually the other relationship they have is the relationship with Paychex, right? So that they started, I don't know when that relationship started. That probably started in 2002 or 2003, where they started, you know, marketing with Paychex, payroll services to accountants. And I think that's when they kind of realized that they had some opportunity to market themselves as a, you know, a trusted source to accountants. And so then that's when they started thinking more about what other services would make sense for accountants. And, you know, we got in there with them about 18 months ago. Intact was about 6 months ago, and now Companion. And I think there's more services that they'll be coming. And what their research shows and what the, you know, our customer acquisition shows is that they do value buying from the CPA to Biz Association because of the screening they do and the value they have and the knowledge they have about the firm. So
yeah, the
goal that CPA to Biz has is to become a source, you know, for the trusted advisor source for accountants to become their trusted advisor to their clients.
Guys, I was reading recently that, I think in a press release that there's, are they developing a portal of some sort? And I don't know exactly what they mean by the term portal. Do you have any insight into that, Randy?
They do. I know a little bit about that. I mean, they do have a portal where they are hosting, and Randy might know more, but where they are hosting content that's relevant for each of the companies that they're partnering with, sign-up pages for each of the companies they're partnering with. And I would suspect over time that portal will get more built out and there'll be more functionality up there. I know, like with Intact, that's where they post the trial, the different types of trial balances and chart of accounts that you might want to have. With us, they host marketing materials and positioning papers and and other things about, you know, how the accountant would actually go offer payable services. And I'm sure they'll do something similar for the companion efforts. Do you have any other insights, Randy?
Don't know if Randy's still on or not. It says he is. Randy, you still
there? Sounds like he's in a conversation with somebody. That happens when you're in a foreign destination, you know?
Actually,
absolutely.
As it turns out, I had it muted just to try to keep it as quiet as possible for you. So, you know, unfortunately, I don't think I have additional insight on that. I do agree with you, Renee, that the AICPA CPA to Biz group did find that opportunity to sell. I think what they're doing is really broadening the portfolio with the companion announcement, and I think they're going to continue to look for places where they can add value on the CPA firms. So, you know, if you think about your product with the payables capability, you think about what Companion's doing, you know, I can name probably a half a dozen other smart relationships for them to build, but I think there's a limit to how much can be effectively promoted and marketed. So, you know, not moving too far too fast is actually probably a wise thing too.
You know, as it relates to a portal, oftentimes I think of a portal as a, you know, sort of an entry point to access multiple different solutions. So it sounds, Renee, like when you're describing the portal, it's more about getting information from them, you know, best practices, white papers, different things like that, as opposed to the firm having an entry point to actually work with their mix of products. Is that right?
That is what it is today. You know, I would be... I think it would be natural for them to extend that into, you know, other areas as well, such as websites and you know, the question will be long term, you know, if accountants want that, then they probably need to have that too. And Randy's got a great point, which is if they start marketing, you know, 20 different products, that's going to dilute their efforts and their brand. So, you know, I haven't really talked to them much about that to understand, you know, what their long term goal is.
I know in talking to Ed Jennings with Companion, they were very excited about this relationship from Companion's standpoint.
Yeah, it makes great sense from, you know, both Companion's perspective from CPA to Biz and, frankly, for potential CPA firm users. And, you know, Darren, as I think through the portal question, you and I have talked about portals so much. When you consider the alternatives that are out there from third parties like ShareFile as an example, you know, so many CPA firms need to solve that problem right now, that's one way to think about it. But then you look at what the major publishers have done with CCH's new portal introduction. Thompson's had a nice portal running for a long time and so forth. So the question becomes what has to get solved from a CPA firm perspective and what needs to be solved from an AICPA perspective. And I think those are actually different.
Yeah, I agree. Well, guys, with the amount of time we have left, I'd like to get Dave's thoughts on this last topic on MiFi. Dave, can you kind of describe that for us, and then we'll just kind of talk about it?
Sure. It's a marvelous technology deployed both by Verizon and Sprint. That is basically a personal Wi-Fi hotspot, but it's cellular. That is, it takes your broadband connection from the nearest cell tower and allows you to hook up to five devices. Where this is a real godsend is if you're traveling, this thing is about the size of four credit cards put together. So it's easily compact, transportable, battery-driven. So for travelers, I think it's a real boon. I like it because out here in the country, as you know, I've suffered horribly because, you know, DSL stops about 2 miles from my house and cable about 500 yards, and there's nothing I can do about that. But there is a cell tower nearby, and I am loving my internet connectivity now. Is it 1 gigabyte? No, it's probably more like 800K. But compared to a satellite connection or dial-up, this is an amazing little device. Discounted, it's down around $50 to buy, plus a two-year service plan.
Yes,
Randy, have you used one of these?
I have used one of these, and I do recommend the MiFis pretty frequently, really from Sprint or Verizon, AT&T. Dave, does your model happen to have external power and an external antenna connection as well?
No, it has external power. It does not have an external antenna with it, which is unfortunate because I could use a little more distance out of it.
Yeah, but this whole concept of just, you know, I'll say plunking it down on the table and you've got five users able to access it right away, I've actually begun recommending this MiFi approach for certain types of audit teams in the field because it sure beats the heck of connecting up traditionally. There's a little concern about hooking up wireless, let's say, for CCH engagement, but for a lot of audit users, this is all the internet access they need in the field. No muss, no fuss with cables. It works great. It is easier to use than the recommendation we began making a year ago, which was USB modems with Cradlepoint Wi-Fi type of devices.
Is this just a Bluetooth connection then, guys?
No, no, it's a regular wireless connection.
Yeah.
I have one as well. So it's one of the things I'll just say just before we get into some of the specifics. It's a great – the reason we got it at our company was a disaster recovery plan. So, yes, it's great for people that are traveling, but, you know, it's great to be able to have another internet source as more of your apps become, you know, available on the internet. Then you as an accountant have to be responsible for making sure you can always get access to it. So having other connectivity sources, and the MiFi is great because then you have it when you travel, and if your internet goes out at home in your office, then you have it there too. And it's wonderful. It's as easy as Randy and Dave said.
I guess my question was, if you set it on a table, how are the five different devices connecting to it?
Wi-Fi.
It's just like an airport, you know, a little router.
Got it.
Here's the other thing, though, Darren, and I think this is a really important point. As you know, I have railed bitterly against using public Wi-Fi for any kind of professional or business service. They're too easy to hack. At an airport, at a hotel, you wouldn't catch me on a public Wi-Fi hotspot for any amount of money, simply because you're putting your computer at risk, you're putting your client files at risk. This runs through a cellular connection with a very limited range. You're not going to be broadcasting to half of the hotel. But the nice thing is it's cellular. Cellular signals are scrambled. They are much, 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 much more secure. So I really recommend this, as Randy said, for audit teams and for traveling accountants. I think this is a much better solution.
The other point on that, too, is that the MiFi, you can have it be open or you can have it be secure. And so, you know, we have all of our stuff secured, so anywhere you go, it's a secure access point.
That's great.
You can't use it.
Yeah, so Dave's point and really Renee's point is spot on. That's exactly the reason we've been recommending, too. We only set them up in secured mode. We really don't like 802.11 B or G, and hopefully we'll see more models within technology as well. But we don't like this open wireless because it's just way too risky. So what happens is you set it up, you can run wireless, and you can make your own cellular wireless access point your preferred connection, and it's almost a no-thinking process.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That sounds like you say it's $50 for the model that you have, Dave?
After the rebate, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's roughly deal. That every month, and if you buy a bunch for your office, you know, Verizon, they did great. You have a lot of great rebate programs like that if you're buying a handful.
Well, gentlemen, we're out of time today. I know Randy needs to get to the beach probably, and Renee, you probably have to catch a flight, and Dave and I have to work.
Let's all go join Randy. That sounds like a lot better.
Like a better deal.
Yeah, I think aloha sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
Aloha.
Well, gentlemen, thanks for your time today. I really appreciate it, and hope everyone has safe travels, and we will talk first part of December.
Sounds great.
Sounds good.
All right, thanks, guys. Thanks. Bye-bye. Everyone.
The CPA Technology Advisors Intersection Live podcast series is brought to you by ADP Small Business Services, supporting the accountant community. For more information about the CPA Technology Advisors' other podcast programs, webcasts, and our e-newsletter, visit cpatechnologyadvisor.com. To ask questions or leave comments about our podcasts, call 800-456-0864, extension 2106. or tune in to future episodes where you're able to ask questions live via TalkShoe.com.